So tell me a little bit about yourself. How old are you? Where'd you grow up? What do you like? What do you hate? What do we need to know about Gian?
Okay, I am 19 years old. I am currently a sophomore with senior standing at Whitworth University in Spokane, and I have decided to double major in biology and psychology because I love sciences and I love learning about the mind and what makes people do what they do. And I'm also really into poetry and photography, and I've played classical piano for 11 years. So the arts are also a huge part of my life.
And tell me about your family.
I have my mom and dad, and they adopted kind of later in life, so I don't have any more siblings, but I do have two dogs, which are also Chinese. They're Shih Tzus, so.
Okay. What are their names?
Their names are Mango and Dumpling.
Okay. And what are your parents' names?
My parents are Kim and Dan.
Okay. How old were you when you came home from China? And what province are you from?
I'm from the Guangdong province, Zhanjiang, China, a really small city in the south, right along the coast, known for fishing and its pearls. And I was 5 months old when I came to the U.S., so I was very young in comparison to a lot of Chinese adoptees.
And what's your gotcha day and year?
Oh, goodness. May 13th, 1996.
Okay. You were young. I think you may be the youngest.
Really?
Yeah, that I've been very young. Yeah, it's unusual. Tell me about your growing up. Did you know a lot of other Chinese adoptees? Did you do a lot of Chinese cultural events? What was your sort of family's take on growing up as a Chinese adoptee?
Okay, so growing up was not as difficult as most people because Washington is extremely diverse in race. Usually there are lots of Asian populations where I live, and although they're not Chinese, it's not uncommon to see several Asians. So even though my parents didn't look like me, I didn't get a whole lot of weird stares unless we were out together. So I just remember knowing that I was adopted from, well, I knew I was adopted all my life. I can't remember a time when I didn't know. There was no big conversation where my parents sat me down, like you see in the movies. But
right.
Yeah, I think I first realized that our family was different when I was taking swimming lessons 1 year at a local pool. I was probably 7 or 6. I don't know, probably younger than that, maybe 5. But there was a girl who saw my mom waiting for me, and my mom is blonde and white, so all the parents sit along the side of the pool, and the kids are getting their lesson, and one of my classmates saw my mom give me a towel or something like that, and she commented on it. She's like, "Is that your real mom?" And although that's a common question among adoptees, I had never heard it, and I didn't really understand what she meant at that age, because I never considered that she would be a real or fake mom. She was just my mom. So I told her, she's my mom. She's like, "Really? Because you don't really look alike." And I was like, And then I started questioning that, and it was just kind of a realization of, you know, I guess we do have kind of a different family. But along with that, I guess we released some feelings of, well, then what happens with my quote-unquote real mom? So I guess around the age of 4, before I really knew what I was talking about, I had started asking about what happened to my birth mother. And my mom said that was extremely unusual at such an early age, but I had been extremely perceptive of it. So I know that I've always wanted to know about that. One thing that helped fill that gap was my parents were consistent about getting together with the girls I was adopted with each year. So they went to China with Then we went to China with about 10 other families, and they all adopted children on the same day. So, and several of them were in the Pacific Northwest. So we got together every single year, once a year, as long as I can remember. And it was comforting knowing that these girls were going through the same experience and that we came from the same origins. So that was something that was consistent in my childhood and even now, which has kind of kept me grounded. But I've always been a curious child, and there are lots of Chinese adoptees in my community. It was not an uncommon event, and I was friends with a lot of them through middle school, but they never seemed to be as curious as I was about wanting to know about my past, and they kind of disregarded it. So I never felt like someone could understand my desire to know that information, because nobody else seemed to want to know about their own. But overall, easy childhood, lots of opportunities to feel included.
This group of kids who you were adopted with, seeing them every year, how did that feel as you got older and you became your own people? And by that I mean, you start out, and I know because we do this with our group too, and we're very close with our group. And in fact, I'm working with an adoptive mom whose daughter was in the same SWI with my daughter. We adopted together, and she's a photographer, so she's traveling with me and taking pictures.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, it's a bond among the parents, but I have to tell you that in our group, the parents are very different. Like, we love each other, but if we hadn't had this life-altering experience together, this very intimate experience, probably most of us would never have even met. We are politically different. We're, you know, we just, in those ways, we're quite different. And it seems to me that the experience of having become parents together and adopted together has just blurred all those lines. It just doesn't matter. You know, mm-hmm. We don't talk about politics. Why? Because who cares? You know, we have something very profound that binds us. And I wonder, from your perspective, what that's like in terms of you guys, the girls. And I don't know if there are any guys in your group or if you're all female adoptees.
Yeah, so the group I've been seeing consistently, we're all female. And we take a giant photo each year of all of us, but unfortunately, it's dwindled down to about 5 to 7 of us who appear regularly at our yearly reunions, but it started as a really giant group. And it's funny that you want to know the perspective of the adoptee, because honestly, we didn't really understand the significance of it until probably fifth grade. Fifth grade was probably when we started to be like, hey, like, I remember you from last year, and we started to talk more and have more fun. But usually it was just normal. Like, if you're a young kid and you're put with somebody you don't know in a strange environment, you're not really going to want to talk to them. So that's kind of how it was for us. But I think all of us are extremely grateful that despite that initial, like, oh, this isn't really that fun, Mom, you know, they continued with it because they knew one day it would be important to us, and it is. So after that reunion where we finally started to click, it's just been almost amazing how much we care about each other. We traveled to China together, two of us. Two of us went to our orphanage on this heritage trip. So the orphanage set up an event specifically for the Chinese adoptees from that orphanage. And so two of them went back. And then the next year, a girl and I from our adoption group went on a different kind of heritage trip. So we traveled all over China, and our last stop was our orphanage, so it was slightly different. But our past means a lot to us, and we always, like, text each other every once in a while, and catch up. We are very involved in each other's lives when we see each other, and, you know, we want to know everything about each other. We're basically long-distance sisters, I want to say, because the bonds that we feel is more than friendship, because we know it goes down further than that. But because we're so spread out and we're starting to take our own paths, it's getting harder to maintain contact. So, but it's been such a valuable experience. I can't imagine not having that kind of support and not having that kind of understanding that's shared between this group. And our parents are honestly very similar. Our dads are super into fishing or outdoor activities, and so all our parents get along extremely well, and some of them adopted more children from China, some of them adopted some more children from Vietnam, and even them, I feel like, even though I wasn't adopted with them, I feel I know them extremely well because I've been seeing them all my life too. So it's just been so amazing watching us grow up. And my mom has a scrapbook of all of the reunions that we have, and she made it just like a reunion book of all of our pictures over every single year. And so we bring it each year, and we always go back and reminisce, you know, on certain memories. And it's something that I don't hear about a lot with adoptees anymore, which is unfortunate. But
of the, you said there were 10 of you initially?
I want to say it was around 10. I'm not sure of how many there were, but there were quite a few families.
How many do you now still get together? You said as the years have gone by, because the same thing happened with us. We all started coming to the first couple, and now it's kind of a core group. Most of the group, but still we've seen less of some two or three families over the years.
Yeah, so there are four of us that consistently come every single year, and then there are two more that come usually maybe every other year or every 2 years. So there are about six of us who really mesh well together and have been doing this for a long time. The rest have either moved to Florida or cross country, something like that. But I'm actually still friends with a girl who I haven't met probably, or I haven't seen since I was maybe two or three.
Wow.
Yeah, but we found each other on Facebook. So we're still connected in some sort of way.
So she was part of a group that you were adopted with, and you found each other on Facebook.
Yeah, well, the idea didn't occur to me because my mom told me that we get a Christmas card from her every year, and I was just, from who? And she said, from one of your other adoption sisters. I was like, oh, well, I should try to, you know, reach out and see if she is interested in getting to know me more. But we haven't really spoken. We just kind of are Facebook friends. But it's nice to see what's going on in her life, even though we don't really have that bond like I do with the others.
What are the other three who you see more consistently? Can you tell me a little bit about what they're doing now?
Yeah, so one is from Oregon, Portland area, and she is so passionate about dance, which is, and she's very good at it. She's been doing it for a very long time. So she was going to a university in Oregon, and then she decided to pursue her passion in dancing. So right now she's in California traveling to all of these auditions and just kind of living the dream, you know, trying to get her name out there. But she's extremely passionate. She's assertive and she's funny, and she's probably the one that's the most full of life out of all of us. She just emanates all of this happiness and energy, and it's really fun to be around her. And then the girl that I traveled to China with, back to our orphanage, she and I probably get along the best, and then the other two kind of get along with each other pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So she's from Washington, and Right now, she is going to, I believe, Wazoo. And honestly, I think she is in marketing. I'm not entirely sure. It's something along those lines, though. I'm pretty sure it's marketing. Mm-hmm. So I think she also still lives at home. So she commutes to her classes and things like that. And she was very involved in tennis and sports and things like that in high school.
How old were you when you went back to China with your friend?
We were going into our sophomore year of high school, so almost 4 years ago.
And how was that? Was that a good age to go, do you think? What were your impressions of
you
the
know,
whole thing?
that trip was absolutely incredible. I think we went at the right age. We were old enough to understand the significance of it. We were experienced enough, you know, to know the privilege that we had, that we were given by being adopted. And we were old enough to have that desire and the endurance to travel around China, you know, because it's pretty exhausting. So, but yeah, we started in Beijing and we just worked our way down to our orphanage, but we went through a tour group that had, oh gosh, we had two tour buses filled with people, and it was specifically for Chinese adoptees. So every family had at least one Chinese girl or Chinese boy, and we were kind of split up between the two buses, and we traveled together. And as the journey went along, we branched off into our respective orphanages or hometowns. So it was a 21-day trip, and we hit cities like Guilin, Chengdu, Beijing, Xi'an, Yangshuo, several, like just all over. And we saw, you know, Forbidden City, the Temple of Heaven, the Great Wall. And what was amazing about that trip was with the older girls and with, of course, my adoption sister, all of the Chinese adoptees would always congregate in the back of the bus, and all we would do is bond. And we all varied in age. There was one who was going into seventh grade. There were some girls who were probably nearing your daughter's age or were your daughter's age. And I still keep contact with them as well. After 4 years, well, I want to say at least two of them I talk to on a regular basis, just to catch up and see how they're doing. But it was the most amazing experience because we got to see other aspects of China and then go back to our hometown and then realize, you know, well, this is different from all those places that you normally see, like, on the internet or in the movies or, you know, something like that. But this is home, basically. That's how I thought of it, you know. Going back to my hometown, I realized that my heart was still in that place and that my heart still, like, part of me still belonged there. So when we arrived, it was just kind of a surreal experience. We had brought a picture of me as a baby with my foster mom, and our tour guide was from our orphanage. She's still there, actually. She still works there. And yeah, so we gave her the photo when we landed in Zhanjiang, and we asked her, you know, like, does this woman still work here? She looks like super young. She looked like 16 or something. And she said, oh yeah, she still works there. She's a school teacher. She teaches like the kids. And we're like, oh my gosh, do you think we could meet her? And she says, of course. Yeah, she'd be like delighted to see you. So when we got out, like, that was our greeting at the airport, basically. So going into there, it was just extremely overwhelming. Like, oh my gosh, I'm going to actually meet somebody who is a link to my past that I've always wanted to know about. So it was extremely, oh man, it was overwhelming. So we arrived at the orphanage, and she knew that I was coming. So she met us at the entrance in the courtyard. So yeah, she knew my Chinese name, so she knew exactly what baby I was, because I guess I was one of her first that she fostered. And so when she saw me, she was just like a mom it was almost surreal how, like, motherly she was in terms of, like, the way she would touch me or guide me or something. And just even the way, like, her gaze fell upon me, it was just, like, she couldn't believe how big I've gotten and, like, how well I'm doing. And even though there's a language barrier between us, it didn't feel like that. So we were going through the orphanage, and she was giving us tours, and we looked at my files and then my friend's files that the orphanage had, and there's not a lot, you know, like, there never is. But I was left in front of a hospital on a really, really busy street. It's a giant pink hospital. So then a policeman found me and took me to the orphanage. So that much I know. I don't really know my birthday. You know, they use your umbilical cord to make you the youngest, most desirable baby. And knowing that piece of information alone, though, has made me feel at ease, just because I know that even if I was a girl and either my parents couldn't afford me or didn't want me, they still cared about me enough to leave me in a place where they knew I would be taken care of and found. So that was a huge comfort. It was tough. It was tough at times. Especially when in our orphanage we got to visit a baby room. And that was really hard, because there's so many girls that are just, they're just a constant stream of them who are always coming in. And the room that we entered was, I want to say, they were less than a year old, and they all had some deformity of some kind. So they had, like, cleft lip or, you know, something like that. A very affordable surgery in America, but not so much in China. And I always talk about this because I still remember it and how much it impacted me. But there was one girl in the room who was honestly the most beautiful baby I'd ever seen. She just had, like, the sweetest face, and she was just a gorgeous baby. And she was wearing a light green, like, little onesie kind of deal, little jacket. And I got to hold her, and her fingers were not separated. So, like, they were defined on her hand, but they were not their own digits. So I don't know, like, the reason why she was left at the orphanage, but I assume that was a contributing factor. So, and I just remember when I was holding her, I think she was probably one of the babies that I held the longest, or I did hold her the longest, and I didn't really pick up any others after I got her, because she just struck me so much. And she was very perceptive for a little one. I feel like she knew, you know, her surroundings well, and she was smart. And I was just so taken aback by how beautiful she was, how, you know, bright she was, and I could not put her down, just because I wanted to take her home so badly. You know, I just, like, you know, you can be my little sister. That's totally fine. My parents can handle another one. But I always wonder what happened to her. I'm in contact with an organization who is affiliated with my orphanage, and I contacted them actually earlier this year, maybe like a month ago, inquiring about her. And they said, you know, we don't really know who that is, but I can tell you that, like, most of our babies are always adopted. So she's somewhere, but it's kind of weird to think that I'll never know, like, what happened to her. And I'll never know her name or how she grows up. but for like a brief moment of our life. Like, I was there, I guess, to hold her. It made me wonder who was there to hold me that I don't know about. So. But yeah. And, anyways, so we spent the day with my foster mom there. And when we were looking over my file, she remembered something, and she said, "You know what? I have photos of you." She said, "I have photos of you from when you were a baby." And I live just across the street, so I'll go grab them for you. And we're like, are you sure? Because, like, if those are your only copies. And she says, "Oh no, I have the film saved, so don't worry, I have it all. I can get them again." So. So we waited, and a couple minutes later, she came back with probably 10 or 11 photos of me as a child, really young, and it was really weird, because, you know, I know what I look like as a baby, but I've never seen these before, so it was just, like, almost an out-of-body experience, like, wait, is that, like, really me? Like, I've never seen these before, and it's not with my parents and stuff like that, you know, it was just so strange, but, of course, my mother started bawling the moment they were pulled out. She's like, "Oh my gosh, this is so beautiful," but, you know, it was just, the thing that really got me about that was she had saved them for 15 years, and they were heavily bleached by the sun, which means that, you know, she had them out. There is a photo of me wearing the clothes I wore on the day I was adopted. So it's kind of like last picture, you know? So she let us have them, and, you know, we cherish them. They're in the scrapbook. But there is in that photo where I was in my adoption clothes, there was another baby next to me, and we don't know who it was. So we guess that she fostered her at the same time that she fostered me. So that's just another question I have, you know, like, who was that girl? Because she wasn't from our adoption group. So maybe she wasn't being adopted that day, but it's just strange how our paths as an adoptee are so different, because since you have no idea what happened your first month or first couple years of your life, and then most people have that knowledge of, you know, who interacted with you or who held you first, stuff like that. We don't have that knowledge, and uncovering little pieces of it adds to the questions, to the list of questions I have. But, yeah, it was an amazing experience, and I know that mine was very different from a lot of people who just go to their orphanage and, you know, see it, because I had things that gave me answers, and it made me realize that originally I had thought, you know, I have two moms, but I have three.
Your foster mother, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I definitely, when we left my hometown, once the trip ended, I definitely left a part of myself there.
How does this experience inform how you feel about China?
You mean like in terms of their policies or just?
Yeah.
You know, I've never really held it against China for the one-child policy. I've never felt any... I've never held a grudge, I guess, against that policy. Because without it, there would be so many Chinese adoptees who would not have the opportunities or experiences that they'd have today. But, you know, the flip side of that is you're ripped away from what is, I don't want to say, you're ripped away from something that I feel like every human should have a right to, which is, you know, knowledge of their family and of their past. And that's not fair because it brings up a lot of psychological damage and emotional damage in life if you are affected by it, like I have been. And I don't think that's okay, but you can't please everybody, and they just did what they were thinking was best at the time for the country. So, you know, that's just the way it goes. You can't change that. And I'm not disappointed in, you know, what happened to me, because my parents are the best. And I love them, and they've given me everything I ever needed. So you can't really ask for much more.
I think you have a very, you know, touching and mature, at the risk of sounding like a old lady, view of it, because it's true that there's a certain reality to this that can't be changed. Mm-hmm. And there's a perspective on it that is a kind of governmental perspective from the Chinese point of view at that point. And then there's the effect on China itself and on people in China. I mean, there are so many different perspectives on it. And I think it's really, it's very good of you to be open about how you think about it.
You know? Yeah. When I heard about the two-child policy, at first I didn't know how to feel. You know, when you hear about that, there are like a lot of what ifs, what if, what if, what if. But you can't really dwell on those questions too long, or else you'll just drive yourself insane because you'll never know. But I think that it's fortunate for the families who actually wanted to keep the second child but were forced to give one away. So I'm happy for them. And I'm happy for the future children who would have been put in an orphanage and no longer have to be. So it's just interesting how this country is developing, I guess, with all that.
Do you think that the root, is it fair to say, is it accurate to say that the root of your desire to know more was, at least when you were younger and maybe now, I don't know, fundamentally about wondering why you had become available to be adopted, why your parents had made that decision?
Yes, yeah. I would say that, assuming, you know, when I was 4 and started asking questions, and definitely now, I've always wanted to know why did you leave me there. I try not to think about it as why didn't you want me, mm-hmm. but because I don't know if they did or didn't. But I feel like that's the question that all of us carry all the time inside of us, is why. But if it can't be answered, then it can't. And I really, you know, you hear these amazing stories of people who have found their birth parents. And the first time I realized that there is a chance of finding them, or that people could do it and that it was possible, you know, it's always been a desire. So it's kind of hard to go about that, though. Some people just get lucky. So.
Do you think you'll search?
You know, I honestly wouldn't know where to start if I did. I'm reaching the age where I could, you know, in the future if I wanted to. Once I'm financially stable and on my feet. Mm-hmm. But as of now, you know, mm-hmm. I try to not think about it as much just because I know how I felt as a child with these questions. And so I try to direct that energy into things that could benefit people who might be going through the similar experiences as I have, which is partially why I like started my club at my school, and I speak at adoption panels a lot and stuff.
Tell me about your club. I hope this isn't too weird, but I looked you up on Facebook before we talked, and I saw your club.
No, it's okay.
So, and I was interested in it. Tell me a little bit about the work that you're doing.
Yeah, so we are called the Adopted Pirates of Whitworth, and I founded it my freshman year of college, and I actually had the idea the summer going into college. So it was kind of a thought that was swirling around in my head because I've always had a passion for wanting to know more about my own adoption and wanting to help others through that. It's just been a huge theme in my life. So I got to school and I immediately started inquiring about how to start a club. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to see who would be interested in it and who would be, you know, willing to open themselves up and do stuff like that. So once I got chartered, which took several months just because it's a long process.
To be a recognized student organization kind of thing?
Yeah, kind of like that. Get the funding worked out, you know, get approved by student government. I guess it took about a month. But I revealed the big news on my mom's birthday. So she was like, oh my gosh, no, that's so good. Blah, blah. But it was kind of a thank you, you know, to my mom. Because I want her to know that, you know, I love her. And that I'm grateful for what she's done in choosing me as her child. And I want to give back that love in a way. So we didn't really know where to start out at first because we were wondering, what should we do as this club? You know, there isn't a huge adopted community in Spokane just because it's not as diverse as the western side of Washington. So my roommate and I at the time, she was a sociology major and she wanted to be a social worker, and she had a lot of connections with foster homes and things like that. And she was very passionate about foster care. So together we kind of had the idea of, well, if we can't really help adopted kids, like internationally adopted kids, I'm sure that, you know, there are some domestic adoptions in the area, and we know that there's a huge foster care population in the area. So we have decided to host an event on campus for foster children. And it was a little shaky starting out at first because we kind of chose a holiday that's well known, you know, like Thanksgiving or Valentine's Day or something like that. And we would go out and buy all of the supplies, come up with activities to do for the kids, and it's just a very long planning process, like more than I expected. I'd never really been in charge of doing a club or anything big like that before, so it was a learning experience. And the people who are interested in it were usually, I think most of them were adopted, domestically or internationally, but not many foster past foster kids, because I know that the percentage of them going to college is low, which is why we wanted to host it on campus so foster kids could see, you know, this is what college is, a college campus is like, this is what going to college is going to be like, and stuff like that. So we do cater to younger children. So I think our last event, we had around 80 people come, and the kids, the oldest child was 12. So, and the youngest was probably 2. So very young. And they just kind of come in and they eat and they do like interactive like food crafts or arts and crafts, get their face painted, win prizes. We just really want to make some fun that's specifically for them, because we want them to know that people are thinking about them. You know, they deserve to have fun too, because their lives can be challenging. And honestly, since I don't have a lot of experience in like with the foster care system or a whole lot of knowledge about it, I'm trying to learn more. I'm trying to understand all aspects of it, because in our nation, it's something that affects so many families and children, but nobody seems to talk about it. And that's kind of the basis of which of the basis that our club is founded on, because we wanted to raise awareness. We wanted to make people realize that there is this issue and we should know about it. And the people who are involved in it deserve to have fun, and deserve to have a normal life. So we have that event, and we've slowly been getting our name out into the community. It's been very difficult because organizations might not want to spread our invitation to others, or don't get back to us, or, you know, several reasons like that. So it's been challenging, gaining popularity. But this year was a huge success because we had over 100% more people come than last year, probably over 200% more. So it was amazing. And of course, you know, the club members who help make decorations or volunteer, it wouldn't be possible without them, because there are only 3 officers and we can't do everything. So, but it's been exciting because we're now affiliated with a foster care support group who wants to have us host them. So we're going to start that with a new year. We're going to have them come to campus once a month, and they really want to, like, have their meeting. And then we're going to, like, look after the kids and have some fun with them while they have their meeting. And one of them has been very active in contacting me about, you know, potentially having a panel of some sort for future parents who want to be foster parents or want to adopt. So I'm glad that we're making a difference, because I really want to.
Oh, it sounds awesome. It sounds awesome. And I know from my own university what it takes to get a new organization started. So I really yeah. understand the rock you have rolled uphill to do this. Mm-hmm. So is there anything that you would like to say to people about being adopted, being Chinese, but being a college student, trying to get a club started, whatever? Is there anything that you would like people to know that maybe they don't know, that you wish you didn't have to constantly say?
So I guess it's extremely, it's not offensive, but it's not exactly the most polite thing in the world to ask if your parents are your real parents, or I guess just be careful of the way you phrase things when you ask questions. It's okay to be curious, and most people are happy, you know, answering questions about their past. But I know that one friend I've had since I was 3, she's been my best friend, and she lives in my hometown with me, and she's adopted from China, as well as her little sister. Her little sister and her mom were in the store one day when they were years ago. It was a long, long time ago. I don't even remember it. But her mom told me that one time a woman came up to her and asked her, what was it? Like, oh, so, like, how much did your daughter cost? Like, she was an item at the store. So just be careful of how you phrase things, even if you don't mean harm. And also know that even if families look different, diversity is okay. And I think that, especially now in 2015, that's something that is not exactly, people are not tolerant of that, of the concept of diversity. And it's unfortunate because it affects all races, not just minorities. And I think that if you try to understand different cultures, and if you try to understand where they're coming from, instead of throwing your stereotypes or your prejudices against them, then it'll be easier to accept them. So not just relating it to adoption, but diversity is okay. And just because, I guess, a family looks different, it doesn't mean that they're a different family. And I think that that's really hard for people to understand. And I don't know why, because literally we are just a normal family. It's not any different from an all-white family or an all-African-American family. It doesn't matter if one child is white and another is Asian or another is Hispanic. You know, we're all the same. We're just a family. And there's nothing that's unique about us other than our races. So I think that, and honestly, I've grown up very open-minded about a lot of topics because my family is so diverse. Not just my immediate family, but my dad's side of the family is all Korean. My mom's side of the family has a lot of Russian-speaking people. And it's kind of funny because all of my friends growing up have been bilingual, or their parents immigrated over from another country. So I've had a Russian best friend, Filipino best friends, Chinese best friends, the list goes on and on. And I respect that. I respect that diversity. And I understand the cultures and I appreciate them. So I think instead of questioning why a family is the way it is, you should just accept that this is the reality.